Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated June 16, 2017. We'll start today's readings on the front page with Government and Politics. Illinois Governor calls special session to force budget deal. Chicago. Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner has called legislators back to the Capitol for a special session starting next week to hammer out a budget deal and end an unprecedented impasse that could enter a third year. The Republican, in a Thursday Facebook video and statement, accused majority Democrats of ignoring his long-term recommendations to fix the state's massive financial problems. We have tough, urgent choices to make, and the legislature must be present to make them, he said. We have little time to change the direction of our state, to come together around a budget compromise that creates a brighter future for all the families of Illinois. Democrats rejected Rauner's statements Thursday, saying they've presented viable options. Lawmakers adjourned last month without a deal before a critical May 31st deadline, triggering the need for a 3/5 majority vote instead of a majority on budget agreement. There are options on the table, including a Senate-backed plan, and another presented this week by Republicans. State Senator Chapin Rose, Republican of Mahomet, lauded the new Republican budget package and said he supported the decision to return to Springfield, calling on House Democrats to step up to the plate. Clearly, sitting at home is doing nobody any good as our state hurtles toward junk bond status on July 1st, Rose said in a statement. State Representative Bill Mitchell, a Forsyth Republican, called Madigan negligent in his duties and said the speaker should have kept lawmakers in Springfield since June 1st. The people of Illinois absolutely are sick and tired of the shenanigans over in Springfield. I applaud the governor for taking action, Mitchell said. We need to stay in session, do our job, and pass a balanced budget. Democratic Representative Sue Scheer of Decatur said the two parties can work well together, citing cooperation with Mitchell on a bill that would allow Macon County officials to use eminent domain to acquire land for the long-awaited Beltway project that would connect Interstate 72 and U.S. 51. Rauner, however, is another story, she said. It's really hard to figure out what he's going to do. He says he'll sign things and then he doesn't, she said, citing the so-called grand bargain compromise negotiated by Senate leaders earlier this year. The talks fell apart in March, and Senate President John Cullerton accused Rauner of sabotaging the deal. It makes it very difficult to reach tentative agreements when you don't know if you can trust what they say or not, Scheer said. The special session could run up to 10 days, with dates set from June 21st to June 30th. The new fiscal year starts July 1st. The back and forth is a repeat of the last 2 years in Springfield, with both sides blaming each other for the stalemate, the longest of any U.S. state. The first-term governor has called for pro-business reforms since he took office in 2015, saying they should happen in conjunction with a budget and an income tax increase. Democrats have said some of those ideas hurt the middle class, and they've taken up many others, including workers' compensation reform. Republicans say the attempts fall short. In the meantime, pressure has been mounting to get a deal. Credit ratings agencies have threatened further downgrades to the state's lowest in the nation rating without a state spending plan. On Thursday, Illinois lottery officials said the state might get dropped by the end of the month from the Powerball and Mega Millions games without a budget. House Speaker Michael Madigan said Democrats have worked to find common ground from the beginning, but Rauner has refused. House Democrats still will continue to work on the budget from Springfield, Madigan said in a statement, but as Governor Rauner has met each of our attempts to date with refusal, it's clear that the onus is on the governor to show that he is finally serious about working in good faith to end the crisis he has manufactured. Cullerton spokesman John Patterson said the Senate budget, a $37 billion spending plan with cuts and an income tax increase, draws on Rauner's ideas. He said the Senate wants the governor to finish the job. I'm not sure where Governor Rauner was during the first half of the year, but the Senate did his work and balanced his spending plan using the numbers and tax rate he wanted, Patterson said, urging Rauner to work with legislators in the House. Rauner says he supports the Republican budget and reform plan announced this week, calling it a compromise. It calls for a four-year property tax freeze, term limits, and other changes for an income tax increase that expires after 4 years. During the impasse, the state's backlog of unpaid bills has toppled $14 billion. There have been major blows to higher education and social services with cutbacks. A coalition of social service providers has filed several lawsuits seeking to force the state to pay, saying the state hasn't honored contracts during the impasse. An appellate court dismissed one of the lawsuits on Thursday. Pena struggles with grief after five die in a van train collision. Families in Pena were in shock Thursday as they came to terms with a nightmare accident that saw a freight train plow into a van, leaving five senior citizens dead. The victims, aged between 77 and 89, were listed as John Sonny Castle and his wife Mary H. Castle, Herbert Herb J. Castle and his wife Nell R. Castle, and Mary M. Pugsley, all of Pena. The Castle men were brothers, and Pugsley was Mary Castle's sister-in-law. Friends said the families often did social activities together and were headed back home Wednesday evening after attending an ice cream social fundraiser hosted at South Fork United Methodist Church, about 6 miles east of Nokomis. Their vehicle had been crossing a railroad line near the intersection of County Road 1800 East and Illinois 16 when it was struck by the train. Three of the victims died at the scene and two were later pronounced dead after being airlifted to hospitals. The emotional repercussions of the tragedy has been felt immediately. One of the responding Christian County Sheriff's deputies, Tyler Castle, arrived at the tracks to find himself dealing with his grandparents, John and Mary Castle, and his great-aunt and uncle, Herb and Nell Castle. Sheriff Bruce A. Kettlecamp said Tyler Castle was pulled from the scene and his department turned the investigation over to the Illinois State Police. Castle is now on leave while he deals with his grief. Unfortunately, this happens all over the United States. Police officers respond to calls and find it's their own loved ones that are involved, said Kettlecamp. This one has really affected the whole sheriff's office, because we're all one family, and when one person is hurting, we're all hurting. There are a lot of heavy hearts around here today. That was the sad theme throughout Pena, where the Castle brothers, known for their family's concrete and construction business, were described as prominent residents and pillars of their community. Earl Baker, president of the Pena Lions Club, said the Castle brothers were leading Lions, who contributed much. He described how Herb Castle, for example, was the mastermind behind the Lions Labor Day Parade float entry, which had won awards. He was a go-to guy, and both Herb and John were amazing, caring people, said Baker, 68. They knew everybody, and Mary Castle always had a hug for everyone. When one fellow called this morning and told me what had happened, I just broke down. It's unbelievable. They lived here all their lives, and with their families and friendships. It's just a sad day. The Lions Club was to have a special dinner Monday where members bring their wives. That has now been canceled as a mark of respect. Baker says people need time to come to terms with a tragedy on this scale. As he points out, it's only the latest in a series of horrific events to batter the small-town population around 5,000. In recent months, Pena has seen a baby and a toddler die in the same house fire, a 43-year-old man die in a house fire, several unrelated arson fires, and most recently the body of a 59-year-old man was found beaten to death in his Lake Pena home, May 31st. So tragic: fires, arsons, killings, and now this, Baker added. You feel it in a small community. And yet Baker found a smile occasionally touching his lips as family memory, happy memories of his absent friends crowded in while he was speaking. Baker is vice president of the Pana Area Senior Center and said he often asked the Castles if they wanted to drop by for food, games, and activities. And you know what they would tell me? We're not old enough, he recalled with a chuckle. They were always young at heart. The Reverend Amanda Richards is pastor of Pana First Methodist United Methodist Church, where both Castle couples attended. Her phone had started ringing off the hook within minutes of the accident, and she had gone to comfort the families Wednesday night. She described the Castles as kind and caring and among the first people she met when she arrived to take over the church a year ago. Nell Castle came to our home and brought us cupcakes, and that day just happened to be my birthday, said Richards, 38. And then there was Mary Castle, who just gave the best hugs. She was known for her hugs. Kindness and caring exemplified them all. Now the pastor is sitting down to the sad duty of retooling her regular Sunday sermon to mark the absence of familiar, friendly faces she will no longer see looking up at her. She said they always sat in the same spots and is thinking their places ought to be picked out in some way. We will all be grieving together on Sunday, Richards added. And the one reassuring thing we all know is that the Castles and Mary Pugsley are all with the Lord. As people of faith, that is the foundation upon which we stand. Over at South Fork United Methodist Church, which was hosting the ice cream social for another church, the contrast between a happy fundraiser for missions work and the nightmare that followed was hard to bear. Everybody had a nice evening, and then to have it end like this, said Suzanne Dooley, a member of the South Fork congregation, who had sat near the Castle couples and Pugsley and saw them enjoying themselves. It just reminds us how frail life is and how quickly life changes, and it brings us a new connection with that reality, she said. But if we have a strong faith in God and a belief in Jesus, that His strength will get us through tragic moments like this, then we still have a hope in life. Central Illinois farmers cope with extreme weather. Decatur. Last month, 5 inches of continuous rain flooded crops. Then sustained winds kicked up a dust storm event not seen in some 35 years. A week later, more heavy rain. Only a few weeks later, farmers and meteorologists are worried about a possible drought conditions. This is Central Illinois weather in 2017. At this point, farmers are looking at a potential 5 to 10% loss in crop yields due to the floods. So far this growing season, some producers have already replanted parts of their land 3 times because of the seesaw of wet and dry conditions. The problem comes from prairie potholes, subtle depressions in the ground where rainwater will collect. With a wetter spring that is now turned into a drier summer, those areas were larger than normal, said Kent Bonhoff, the USDA's district conservationist for Macon County. Dealing with weather is one of the most difficult and defining aspects of farming, but observers of the region's agriculture see long-term changes to climate, the last couple of months being the most recent example. It's just something that farmers have to take. There's nothing they can really do about it. They've turned it over to Mother Nature to a point, said Tim Stock, director of the Macon County Farm Bureau. 70 years ago, a 4.5-inch rain was considered a once-in-a-century event, according to the state climatologist Jim Angel. Both storms in May approached that number. The current 100-year rain event number is 7 inches, but Angel said the Illinois Water Survey is in the middle of another update. I expect the study will be higher than that, he said. Farmers constantly have to make hard, near-term decisions that can determine their yields and bottom line for the entire year. But increasingly, weather scientists and engineering officials are encouraging them to also think years down the line. We don't make recommendations whatsoever. We try to provide as much information as we can and direct them in the right way to find out what they're looking for, Stock said. Government officials and organizations that work with farmers say the same thing. Farmers need to reach their own conclusions. Angel, the state climatologist, said it was hard for a while to engage farmers about the potential consequences climate change could have in America's breadbasket. For some reason, the 2012 drought kind of changed everybody's attitudes about climate change. I think part of it is people thought, we can manage warmer weather or drier weather. But when you get an extreme event like that, that kind of caught everybody's attention, Angel said. That year, a prolonged drought led to a 30% drop in Illinois corn yields. Agricultural engineers and conservationists say certain farming methods can help make soil and crops more resilient to extreme weather. Dennis Bork, a farm operator in Macon County, who has recently worked with county officials to do a study on cover crops, which plants are plants that grow in the soil at different times from corn or soy. The cover crop roots help keep dirt in place when the major crop is not in season. Bork worked with county officials to get special equipment needed for strip tilling, a farming technique that, along with cover crops, can help combat soil loss. Strip tills minimize disruption in the topsoil, so it's less likely to get carried off by rainwater or wind. Bork said the Macon County Soil and Water Conservation District recently finished a 5-year study on cover crop practices that found they had little effect on yields and saved on some overhead costs associated with planting. It gave me a chance to learn and gives the Conservation District some good information to convince other people to try the practice, Bork said. Bork said farmers are just like any other community. Some are willing to take a risk and try something new, while others aren't. You're doing something different than what the neighbors are. If that's a problem, if you don't want to be different than the neighbors, this practice won't work very well. But if you're willing to take the risk and learn and grow, it's a very good experience, Bork said. According to data from the Illinois Department of Agriculture, conventional tillage still predominates in Macon County. Angel said having conversations with farmers about different techniques has been a challenge, but it's improved over the last few years. There's more awareness in terms of what's going on and what could be the upcoming challenges, Angel said. Angel said thankfully there is some rain in the forecast. Macon County received some thunderstorms Wednesday. If we can get an inch or two or widespread rain that will turn back the clock before we go another 2 weeks without any rain, that puts you behind the eight ball, Angel said. Rain, rain, go away. No, wait, come back. Recent precipitation at the Decatur Airport, May 8.99 inches. Normal is 4.26 inches. June to date, 0.10 inch. Normal is 2.18 inches. That's data from the National Weather Service. Some highlights in this week's calendar. There was an ice cream safari today from 11:30 to 2 at the Scoville Zoo. Sample ice cream flavors throughout the zoo. Saturday, Garden Tea Luncheon for Dove, Inc., 11 a.m., First Church of the Nazarene, Clinton. $15 in advance. Tickets are available at Flower Corner or Dove in Clinton. Dessert Bar and Beauty of a Victorian Garden by Bloomington Tea Ladies. Sunday, Lincoln's Legacy Lessons from History, 2 p.m., Rock Springs Conservation Center. Professor Emeritus Dan Guillory of Millikan explores Lincoln's examples of compassion, tolerance, and civility in the face of adversity. Register online or by phone. And there's a correction. The Kablooey Group Cabaret Show will be at 7:30 p.m. today, June 16th, on the third floor of the Madden Arts Center. The date was incorrect in a story on D1 of Thursday's Herald and Review. The newspaper erred. Main Hangar Restaurant to close at Decatur Airport. The Main Hangar Restaurant owner, Chris Cooper, said his family decided not to renew their lease with the Decatur Park District and will close at the end of June after 9 years operating at the Decatur Airport. Cooper said that while the restaurant was profitable, the family, Cooper, his wife Stephanie, and Stephanie's parents, Matthew and Francesca LaMonica, decided it was time for a change. "We want to spend more time with each other," Chris said. Decatur Airport Director Tim Wright said that he was saddened by the news but didn't think the closure would be permanent. "We'll be looking for a new tenant to operate the restaurant area," Wright said. "We'll put out a request for proposals and see what comes in. We're pretty confident that we'll find someone. It's a wonderful location with the best view in the community. We wish them nothing but the best. It was a great partnership for 9 years." Decatur Park District Executive Director Bill Clevenger also wished the Coopers and LaMonica's well. He said he hoped to find an experienced operator to take over the business. He said he didn't know if anyone does take it over whether or not the name of the restaurant would remain the Main Hangar. "I don't know what's going to happen. I would hope we can find someone," Clevenger said. "We won't know until we begin the search, what the potential might be." "From our perspective, we really want to keep a functional, vibrant restaurant in there. It adds to the terminal and to our air service." Chris Cooper said Matthew LaMonica had heart surgery last year, and Francesca LaMonica will have her second knee replacement surgery 2 days after the restaurant closes. "They're not getting any younger," Chris Cooper said. Cooper said he and his wife had other employment opportunities, and not operating the restaurant will give them more time with their kids, ages 12 and 6. "Like everyone else, we want time to enjoy our family," Chris Cooper said. "I'm rarely home on the weekends. This is the best decision for our family." The restaurant announced the closure on its Facebook page and website, leaving this message to its customers: "Looking back on our years here, we'll remember how special it was to share a little bit of our family with you through some of our recipes that we created for you in this restaurant." Chris Cooper said it wasn't an easy decision. "It was a couple of months in the making, talking and trying to figure it out," he said. "The Park District has been amazing to us for 9 years. Decatur Park District Executive Director Bill Clevenger was nothing but supportive and will cherish the time we got to spend with them. The restaurant specialized in Italian Sicilian food, offered an all-you-can-eat brunch buffet on Sundays, and hosted regular comedy nights. The LaMonicas were the former owners of All-Star Diner in Mount Zion and Taylorville's Le Concadoro. They, along with the Coopers, opened the restaurant in April 2008. A restaurant of the same name was closed by the Decatur Park District in 2005 due to lack of revenue, but Chris Cooper said that wasn't the case this time. "We didn't get rich, but it took care of our family," he said. Public safety: fire set at vacant house on city's demolition list. Juvenile spark blaze. Decatur: a vacant house on the city's east side that caught fire Thursday night has been on the city's demolition list for 3 years. Battalion Chief Todd McKenzie said Fire Inspector Mike Whittington determined that juveniles had set the fire at 2508 East North Street. No one was injured, though downed power lines sparked in the backyard. According to the City of Decatur's code violation database, the property owner was notified in April 2014 that the city had deemed the property unsafe. The fire department responded to the call shortly after 7 p.m. McKenzie said the fire was mainly in the back of the house. There was still a live power line down in the backyard, so we had to be cautious with. So we had to do everything from the front, McKenzie said. But they were able to get the boards on the windows and door pulled off and got in there. The guys knocked down the fire pretty quick. City officials have struggled for years with the issue of vacant and dilapidated properties. A Herald and Review analysis of the city's demolition list in February showed that it contained more than 100 properties, some of which had been identified as unsafe years earlier. Another vacant home on the list was the site of a suspected arson in January. Firefighters spent hours battling a blaze at 1228 East Prairie Avenue, which had been labeled as unfit for human habitation in 2013 due to the condition of the structure. City Manager Tim Gleason said that a neighborhood redevelopment plan is set to come before the Decatur Council in the coming months. Hickory Point Golf Course raises its game for tourney. Hickory Point Golf Course raises its game this time of year, with the LPGA Symetra Tour in town for the Decatur Forsyth Classic for the 33rd time. Everything from the fairways and greens to the hospitality is made ready for a championship event. It's all hands on deck for this week, said Greg Foley, course superintendent. Tournament director Cindy Diedrich-Wolfer said the tour's desire to continue its run at Hickory Point is a testament to the Decatur Park District and the groundskeepers throughout the years. There's a high level of expectation, she said. Greg tries to keep that all the time. Brett Lasky, Symetra Tour Strategic Media Partnership Manager, said Hickory Point is a public golf course at a championship level. The tournament goes above and beyond to make sure that it feels like a big event for these players, he said. They roll out the red carpet and make the women feel special. While searching for an ideal tour location, Lasky said his team looks for courses that provide challenging opportunities. After all, the goal of all these women is to reach the top level in their profession. Hickory Point is worthy of a professional golf course, Lasky said. That is what makes this area special. Foley, who had worked at Hickory Point for 17 years, said his crew have extra work to do before and during the tournament, such as mowing, trimming, and other details. This week and the weeks before it are pretty busy, he said. Everybody gets the word out, and the golf course is in really good shape, so we have a lot of golf outings. While the tournament gives the crew added impetus to have the golf course in top shape, Foley said spring is usually the easiest time of year to get that done. It's pretty lush and everything is growing well, he said, versus August when you've gone through the heat of the summer and the drought and dry times. Terry Hamill, executive director of the Decatur Area Convention and Visitors Bureau, said Decatur's hard work and hospitality are part of the tournament's appeal. We put on a great show for them, she said, and they love the course and the way it is laid out. Hamill noted the tournament's economic impact on the area as well. The golfers, staff, families, and other visitors utilize the hotels, restaurant, gas station, and shopping areas. They hit just about every spot, Hamill said. They spend a lot of money. Hamill said the golf course is an important part of that impact. She has been on the tournament committee for 21 years and worked with Foley on many of them. You've got to keep the place ready for everybody, she said. Greg never brags about himself, but he's quite a champion. The grounds crew is the first to arrive at the golf course, preparing the fairways, greens, and other areas, and Lasky was effusive in his praise. They are the unsung heroes, Lasky said. Nobody knows these guys, but they do their part. Foley's work is admired after the professionals have moved on, too, when the local golfers return. They love to play on Monday or Tuesday because they know a tournament was played here and how good the greens and the courses are, Diedrich-Wolfer said. The people can come out and play the same course that a rising LPGA star played, Lasky said. If you go, it's Decatur Forsyth Classic, LPGA Symetra Tour. It's June 16th through the 18th. It's at Hickory Point Golf Club. Admission is free. On the web, check DecaturForsythClassic.com. The Payless Shoe Source in Brentwood Village Shopping Center will close, leaving no more of the company's stores in the Decatur area. The location is at 3190 North Water Street and appears on the list of company posted on its website June 12th, featuring hundreds of stores it plans to close as part of its Chapter 11 bankruptcy. The company announced in April that it would close the store at Hickory Point Mall in Forsyth. The person who answered the phone at the Decatur store said the closing date was not known. Payless plans to reduce its debt by almost 50%, lower how much it pays in interest, and line up funds. The company said some of its lenders have agreed to make available up to $385 million to keep stores running. The Associated Press contributed to this story. And we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated June 16th, 2017. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.